Hi, everyone. This is Trevor Kincaid at the Center for American Progress. I'm with Larry Korb, and we are all here to discuss the Iraq Study Group report released earlier today. The way the call will work is I will turn it over to Larry in just a second, who will make some brief comments, and then we will open it up to questions. So with that, thank you all for calling in. And Larry, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, thank you all for coming. Let me make a few brief comments on a very long and detailed report. I think that the group is taking a good first step in helping the nation get out of this mess we're in Iraq. I don't think it goes as far enough as it should to really deal with the situation, but let me tell you what I think that is excellent about it. I think that they're right to, you know, say the situation is grave and deteriorating and there are no good options. This is, I think, something any objective observer has known for more than 2 years and something that both the current and future Secretary of Defense now acknowledge, but we don't know what's been acknowledged yet by the president and people like Steve Hadley, his national security advisor. I think they're right in recognizing that our best hope for ameliorating this situation is to put pressure on the Iraqi government to make the painful political compromises necessary to create an Iraq nation that its citizens, regardless of their sect or tribe, are willing to fight and die for. I think they're also correct in recognizing that we must engage in diplomacy with all the countries in the region, including Iran and Syria, in a dialogue on the future of Iraq. And I think in saying that we have to also deal with the situation between Israel and Palestine, that's important because if you remember that Brent Scowcroft back in August of 2002 in a Wall Street Journal op-ed said, you know, that the countries in the region were much more concerned about this than the threat from Saddam Hussein. Now, I've got some problems with it, and they go back to the report that we put out first in September of 2005 and updated this spring called Strategic Redeployment. The first concern I have is we're going to put pressure on the Maliki government by saying that if you don't make the compromises, disband the militias, meet these benchmarks, we're going to withdraw our troops. I think in order to put real pressure on them, you have to give them a deadline by which you will be out, because they have the caveats in there. Well, if conditions permit, and our commanders say that, well, until the Iraqi leadership makes these painful political compromises, nothing is really going to change. You know, they've been in office. We had the parliamentary elections about a year ago, and they really haven't done anything to modify the Constitution to disband the militias. Now, Mr. Maliki says he's going to, you know, things are going to be better by June. Well, you know, we hope so. But what do we do if he has not done that? Similarly, when you talk about chaining, I think it's good to change the mission from combat to training. But you miss an essential point. The problem with the Iraqi security forces is really not training; it's motivation. You know, we're not asking them to take on a major military power in a conventional battle, but basically to do police work against no more than 20,000 insurgents. And if you take a look at the Iraqis, kept 10 divisions, only one of them is really multi-ethnic. And until you have all of the divisions that are multi-ethnic and believe in this thing we call Iraq, they're simply not going to do what they need to do. I mean, just as a, you know, an aside, who's training the insurgents and why are they so effective? They are so effective because they're motivated. And then finally, it's not clear in the report. I've seen some numbers that indicate that after all, we get the combat brigades out. If we do get them out and we still have the trainers, we may still have 70,000 troops there. I think that's way too many troops. And as long as we have a significant American presence, in fact, I would argue any real military presence, you're still going to have people fighting us because they simply don't believe that we're going to leave. They see us as occupiers or the second coming of the British. And if you look at the opinion polls, you know, 80% of the Iraqis think we're contributing to the violence and 60% think it's okay to kill Americans. So I guess my bottom line is good start, but you need to set a specific timeline for withdrawal, which we argued a year ago, 18 months. And since we haven't started it, take another 18 months to get it over with. Leave troops in the region. They don't mention it, but I was happy to see in Don Rumsfeld's memo the other day where he talked about having a rapid reaction or a surge force left in Kuwait, which, again, is something that we urged over a year ago. Thanks, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Larry. Before we enter into the question and answer period, I'd like to give you all my email. So if you're interested in receiving a copy of Strategic Redeployment, which Larry and Brian Katulis co-authored in May of this year. My email is tkincaid@americanprogress.org. Also, we are recording this call for anyone interested in receiving it. We can email that out also, and it will be radio quality for those of you calling in that way or for that outlet. At this time, I'd like to open it up for any questions you may have.
We'll take our first question from Richard Sisk.
Yeah, hi, Larry. It seems the administration is already balking at the idea of talking to the Iranians. Does that make everything else in this report moot?
Well, not everything. I mean, it certainly doesn't help because, as the report acknowledges, and most people looking at the situation know that the in order to have a stable Iraq, you're going to have its neighbors willing to ensure that that happens and not do things to make it less stable. Now, there are a number of ways in which we can talk to the talk to the Iranians. For example, Mr. Maliki was talking about a regional conference. If he invites them, in effect, we can do what we're doing with the Iranians now, sort of talk through the Europeans. But I agree, unless you get Iran and Syria involved, you're simply not going to deal with this situation. I remember this, Rich, back to Vietnam. When Nixon was trying to get out, he tried to get the Chinese and Russians involved to help us get out. And I think if you set a date for a complete withdrawal, the countries in the region will be happy, you know, will be more than willing to help us stabilize the situation so we can get out.
We'll take our next question from Matt Renner.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Korb. My question is, what are you hearing from the, if anything, from any of the supposedly progressive members of the Senate or House on this report? I mean, are they saying that this goes far enough? Are they happy with this?
Well, I without attributing to specific people, I think what it does is it vindicates what many progressives have been saying up on the Hill for quite a while, and that includes not just Democrats, but people like Chuck Hagel, that the situation is getting worse. We need to begin putting pressure on the Maliki government to start this reconciliation process. And the answer is not, you know, to flood the place with, you know, hundreds of thousands of more American troops. Now, I also think that this is a good way in which the various progressives who have differences about the specifics can unite. Because one of the good things about this is you've got 10 wise people here. I think the average age is over 70. I mean, Panetta is 68, and he's the youngest as far as I can see. And, you know, basically saying, you know, this is the way you got to do things. We all came in here with different viewpoints. My former colleague from the Reagan administration, Ed Meese, you know, working with somebody like, you know, Leon Panetta or Senator Simpson, working with Bill Perry, saying, okay, we may disagree on, you know, certain specifics, but we got to move in this direction, and this is a very good way to begin. If you don't, like I happen to support a timetable, well, if you can't get consensus on a timetable, this is pretty close because it says, hey, by the first quarter of 2008, get all your combat forces out of there, and, you know, they should be trained and ready to go, so you should be able to get rid of, you know, a lot of your trainers. So I do think that this will help unify the progressives and hopefully unify the country, because I think that's the real key thing. Whether you're, you know, a progressive or you're liberal or conservative, I think everybody recognizes that we've got to get this situation under control, and we've got to begin to move on, because if nothing else, and they pointed out, it's jeopardizing, you know, our security interests in other parts of the world. And I didn't see it in there. I don't know if they got into the fact of, what it's doing to the quality of the Army. I mean,
right.
Yeah, they do mention that. Yeah, and that's it's another area.
Great, thanks.
Take our next question from Louise Branson.
Oh, hi, Larry. I've been reading this, and it looks to me like it's a good analysis, very clear-eyed analysis of the situation in Iraq, but it also looks to me like a plan for not quite declare victory and leave, but declare that we've done as much as we can and leave. Is that how it strikes you?
Yeah, I think so, because they're basically saying there are no good options, which is something when we did our own plan here, we pointed out that you got to begin from where you are. There are no good options, and they can't guarantee that what they recommend will work. For example, if Maliki doesn't get his act together and we say, okay, we're going to cut financial support, boy, that does increase the risk. But by setting specific benchmarks, we can not only, I think, put pressure on him, but fulfill our moral responsibility, because then nobody can accuse us of not giving them a fair chance to deal with a situation that we helped create. I mean, after all, if you leave in September 2008, that means you'll be there almost 5 years. I mean, in January 2008 or the first quarter of 2008, that's 5 years. And that's a pretty long time, as people have pointed out. That's longer than World War II. So I think that it does say, that what we need to do for our own security interests is move on. We've done as much as we can. We can't do a lot more. And as great a power as we are, we can't solve every situation and impose our will wherever we might want that to happen.
And what do you think of the training idea? Because it seems to me one of the flaws, besides the motivation, is the fact, which they pointed out in the report, there are so few Arabic speakers and so few people with cultural awareness. And that the report of one of the battles that was in LA Times and Washington Post, sounds as like even the best trained Iraqi forces, they can't communicate and aren't performing.
Well, that's certainly true. And I mean, the fact that we don't have enough Arabic speakers, the fact that we didn't get this ready before we went in, because the assumption was that we go in, we'd be greeted as liberators and we could get out. And even the whole training function suffered for quite a while. In November 2003, when I was there under a DOD-sponsored trip, they paraded out all these people and told us how well-trained they were and, how ready they were to carry out their functions. And I was thinking, in a month of training here, you think these people are going to be ready to do it. But they were focusing on numbers, and you've all seen the numbers that we've seen, over the years, in terms of this many, that many, and how many are ready, how many are not ready. So yeah, I think it's easier said than done. Because and another thing, and it's easy for me to say because I don't have to live with it, you can't, if you keep rotating troops out, particularly the ones who are going to be embedded. I mean, I know why we have a year tour, and that's more than enough for anybody. But the fact of the matter is, if you leave after a year and they bring someone else in, you get the cultural problems and getting used to somebody else. And the Iraqis are basically saying, hey, you're going home. I'm still here, and I have to fight. So, I mean, it's much easier said than done. And I think in the report, you they kind of wish this problem away, and they don't get to it the way that you're saying. And it's going to take a while to get a number of people, trained in Arabic and fluent enough and understand the culture.
Take our next question from Francine Kiefer.
Hi, Francine Kiefer from the Christian Science Monitor. I'm having problem understanding, I guess, about how much of a drawdown would actually be involved by the time 2008 comes along. If we have the trainers, and if we have all the support staff to protect the trainers, if we have the intelligence people, and then they list a whole bunch of categories of other troops that would need to protect the trainers and the forces that we have there, plus special ops, then I'm left wondering, well, how much of a drawdown would that actually be, even potentially, just percentage-wise or kind of rough figures? I'm not sure it would be that huge of a drawdown by the time 2008 came along.
No, I think you're right. The best calculations we can make is about, you still have 70 to 80,000 after you had the combat out of there and a lot of these trainers, and it looks like that you'd have that many in there sort of ad infinitum. And yeah, it's not very, we've been over it, and I've had a lot of bright young people here who are much better at math than I am trying to figure this out this morning. But you're right, it leaves that open, which is one of the problems I have. I mean, if you still have 70,000 to 80,000 Americans there, which is not much less than we were down to. We were getting close to 100,000 not so long ago. Are the Iraqis, you know, not going to see us as the second coming of the British, and are not the Al Qaeda types liable to continue to use that as a rallying cry?
Thank you all very much for calling in. Again, if you would like to receive a recorded copy of this teleconference or a copy of Strategic Redeployment, please send me an email at tkincaid@americanprogress.org. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.